Hi there, this is Bill Prin saying welcome to the panel game which stretches the memory and makes you realize whether you're well up in the news or not. These are the unusual, sometimes very funny happenings reported in the press. Items that were there, but which you probably didn't notice. With me is a panel of three experts who are all journalists and they should know what's going on. And on the panel this week, we have Madeline Pampillion, George Young, and Don Scott. And as usual, we start off with our bloopers of the week. And my prize blooper this week was sent in by Mr. Anthony Morris of Rudaport. Thank you, Mr. Morris. And it's a report from a Transvaal paper which reads as follows. The police gave chase at once, and an accident was narrowly averted as the stolen cat hurtled up the road at over 100 kilometers per hour, breaking through a fence into a field. Some cat. John, what's yours?
This appeared in a Johannesburg newspaper. Alberton traffic police, suspecting that Mr. George von Skalkwyk was intoxicated, ordered him out of his car, but he seemed reluctant to open the car door. Ordered a second time, he got out, stone cold sober, but the car door fell.
Madeline?
Mine comes all the way from Bombay, the Indian Express. And the story read, Tamil film star Rajnikant and actress Jayasudha's father, Ranesh, were arrested by the police at Pagampat Airport in Hyderabad on a charge of creating a scene.
Yes. That's very typical. And George?
Well, in a Durban newspaper, there's an advertisement there for accommodation. It said, 5 minutes from the sea, spacious rooms, germs, moderate.
Cheap germs in this day and age. Is remarkable, you know.
What Durban?
And one must have sent in a peculiar thing. I can't call it a blooper. It is actually a letter from the president of a company in Tokyo to the Cape Town Chamber of Commerce, and it's like a jigsaw puzzle. It reads like this. Dear sir, we are come to supply a new product as electronics rubbery stopper for cars. The system is no push cipher door, open at once, alarm sound, at the same time car engine not operation, as no recession of cipher car engine, as no operation. Please information for your members. And Pranukta, if any company interesting, kindly contact with us. Thank you, and best regards. Yours very truly, Nagashuki and Marahuna.
I don't think they've deciphered it yet.
Well, I haven't deciphered it. That's what I think it's Japanese.
Yes.
Anyway, no contribution I'm making to my deciphering of it.
No. Any listener who wishes to send in bloopers cut from the press is very welcome to do so, and we'll use them to read them out. And the address is Bill Prince, Box 2551. Cape Town. Bill Prince, or it's news to me if you like, Box 2551, Cape Town. We'll be happy to feature them and we look forward to hearing from you. Let's start the questions now. Madeline can go first. This is from a local Cape Town newspaper. Kenyan sports writers say they can't understand why the country's team was disqualified from the African Champions Soccer Cup in Cairo. Why was that?
I read that story, and this is honestly, this is not one of my sidetrack bits. I did read that story, and I've forgotten the reason for it. It was in Cairo, and it couldn't. Now, I'll be guessing, but I'm sorry.
All right, John.
Well, I would presume that they started a riot and knocked down a few goalposts and assaulted the spectators. The normal sort of soccer game, in other words. And that they were prevented from playing because of this normal behavior.
Almost. You haven't got it quite right. Maybe George can remember the actual details.
I remember the details that concerned a soccer match, and the referee was injured, and other players were injured, and one man had to be helped off the field with a broken arm, and the match was abandoned on the grounds of violent players.
Well, you've almost got it. The referee was set upon by players who knocked him to the ground and kicked the daylights out of him, breaking his left arm in the process. And the Kenya Times said that the team was unfairly disqualified because only two of the Kenya players attacked the referee. The other players never touched him. And the Kenyan writers failed to understand why they were victimized. John, try this. What shock is in store for some male British office workers in the near future?
Male
British office workers are in for a shock.
Yes, because their kingdom is, their bureaucratic kingdom is obviously being invaded by females.
You make me sound like a termite.
And not only that, but this invasion will include people who are superior to them in the offices.
Well,
from whom they will have to take orders.
Well, that's almost right. Not quite, but almost. Yes. You're on the right track. George, you remember the story?
People are going to be appointed, or women are going to be appointed, on academic grounds. Isn't there going to supersede
you? Nothing academic about this story.
No, I leave it to Madeline.
I happen to know, because I'm interested in it. It's women who are sexually harassed at the office and are allowed to sexually harass back.
Oh, my.
Which I think is a very charming thought. it falls under what is known as the Sexual Discrimination Act. Is that what you're thinking of?
That's right, yes. The British National Council of Civil Liberties has deplored the antics of office Romeos who chase girls around the desk. They have now advised office girls to retaliate by making suggestive remarks about men's physiques. And, as they put it, if a man grabs at a girl, she must grab whatever she can in retaliation. This falls under the British Sex Discrimination Act.
John, that's why I doubt that we'd ever get a newspaper.
So the...
Gay abandoned down in the computer rooms.
Men can't have it all their own way in future. And Madeline agrees, don't you?
Oh, darling, I can't wait to sexually harass you on this program. Stick around.
George, try this first, will you? In Lincoln County in the USA, strikers managed to wriggle out of the strike after 7 weeks of fruitless bargaining. What happened?
Well, if they wriggled out of something, they must have been in a drain pipe and they were down below in the striking place.
No.
My guess didn't work.
All right.
Would you start that question?
Yes. In Lincoln County in the USA, strikers managed to wriggle out of the strike after 7 weeks of fruitless bargaining. So what's the story about?
Yes,
you know, John Wright, what's it about?
The strike was about these people... You're not going to believe us, man.
They earn money
by digging up worms for fishing. And they wanted a cent a worm more. And the people who bought the worms refused.
I do not believe.
They said, no, that was going too far.
That's quite true.
It is true. You made it up out of money.
No, I didn't. This is true. These were worm diggers who wanted a penny a worm raise. 60 of whom were on strike for the extra penny a worm. And they supplied fishermen with bait. The price normally at the moment is 4 cents a worm, which they say is not enough. And believe it or not, the worm industry in Lincoln County is worth over 4 million rands a year and still growing. So don't knock worms.
It's still wriggling.
It's still wriggling.
It's a creeping economy.
Yes. I believe worms are very good to eat. I've read that they are full of
vitamins.
Something or other, aren't they? Do you know anything about cooking or eating worms, madam?
I've told you before that I've eaten worms, but party worms.
Yes.
If I were you, I wouldn't bother, sweetheart. I mean, you know, they might be full with, I don't know, how many vitamins, protein, whatever.
Protein, I heard they were full of protein.
But chewing Mopani worms was not an experience I would care to repeat.
What is a Mopani worm?
Mopani worms are very large, hairy caterpillars that feed on the Mopani trees and are regarded as a great delicacy by, I think it's the end of Eddie, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah. Oh, they're dried, aren't they?
And then they're dried, sun-dried. And then they're sun-dried. Mm. They are then re-cooked.
Hairy caterpillars.
And you've eaten them? I've eaten them.
They didn't taste very nice.
I thought they were rather tasteless, to be honest with you.
Oh, good.
I had them a pop.
I will just put hair onto your teeth.
I beg your word, I will not try them myself. Well, let's go to the next question, shall we? Mr. Uwe Jongblut of Rosebank, Cape Town, is having difficulty with his collection. What's the problem, do you think, John?
It's maybe an unfair question to me, but I happen to know Mr. Jungblut personally.
Do you?
Well, he's actually done some work for me.
Yes.
What, did he make you one?
No, he made one of these things that he makes. He is a stone mason. He does gravestones.
Yeah.
And he has them dotted all over his garden. I know because I've been there and I've tripped over the things. His problem is that he's got so many. He doesn't know where to store them.
That's right, yes. He has about 50 of them,
yes.
And there's no room in his garden around the house.
Mm.
And he says if he puts them all over the garden, it turns the neighbours off.
Mm.
So he keeps them now in a quarry near Langebar.
What I had one of his pieces of work was some years ago, one of our dear pets, a dog, died, and he did a little commemorative plaque in stone for our dog, yes.
What other strange collections do you know about? Anybody? Any of you collect strange things or... Do you collect anything at all?
Well, I've got some very odd friends, Dory. That is a collection.
What do you collect, George? Anything?
Well, I have been collecting pictures of famous ships for the last 50 years. There are about 14,000 negatives of my own, yes.
Well, have you brought a book out yet?
Three books.
On pictures of ships?
Containing pictures of ships, yes. I don't know if anybody reads them, but they've been selling all right.
Well, with 14,000 pictures, you can go on forever, I should say, doing that. And, John, what strange collections or hobbies do you have?
Funny stories on the whole.
You collect them, do you?
I don't write them down, but I store them in the subconscious and then dig down deep when I feel I need them.
Yes, and if anybody asks you to tell one, you can't think of one.
That's correct, yes. But they always come to me half an hour after.
I'll ring you up in half an hour's time.
All right.
Madeline, why has Mrs. Dorothy Sue Earhart of Fort Worth, Texas, decided not to be so free with beer from now on?
I haven't the faintest idea.
All right, John.
She related to Amelia Earhart.
No, I wouldn't know that.
It's my favorite spanner in the world.
No. Nothing to do with that.
Not so free with beer.
Not so free with beer. That is the key phrase.
Yes, she used it to shampoo her hair. She can't do a thing with it.
No, George.
She gave it to a pet bear she had. It's a bear that had already been in the glove box because it had bitten somebody, and she tried to placate it and be friends with it and provide it with this beer, and the beer made the bear unbearable, and it attacked her, bit her. And yes. Now they've got to get rid of this bear and the beer.
Yes, she went to visit a pet Himalayan bear in his cage and offered the bear a beer, which he drank. And when she offered him a second beer, the bear grabbed her arm and bit off part of her fingertip and refused to let go of her. And she had to go to hospital for treatment, and the bears had to sign the pledge. Booze and bears don't mix. John Trilis. In Britain, another crackpot liberation front struck again, but the victims never complain. What's it all about?
The victims never complain.
Never complain. Liberation front. It's a liberation front.
Yes, I think we're back to those men in the office. They don't mind being sexually harassed by women.
No.
Can't wait.
No.
Liberated.
How common the two of you must have read. Was that a funny story?
No, I remember it vaguely, but I can't get the fact now. John's put me right off for coming up with that one.
No, it's the GLF, you see. Go on, last clue.
GLF.
Now, you know it, Madeline.
Yes, I do know.
Tell them.
There was talk about, he said crackpot, and that really is crackpot. There's a young man floating around who says he started an organization called Free Garden Gnomes. Garden Gnomes, because he says the poor gnomes stand out. You remember, John, stand outside in all weathers, and it is cruelty to garden gnomes.
Yes.
And so he stole a lady's gnomes, chopped off their heads and daubed their necks with red paint, and demanded jelly babies as ransom for returning the decapitated bottom. Is that right?
That's right. That's absolutely correct.
In fact, it wasn't a man, it was a boy. Yeah.
Well, it was 18-year-old
lad. 18. And he couldn't stand his gnomes being out in the British rain. He said they should be taken indoors.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, and he says that there will be more raids from the 8-man Gnome Liberation Front.
In fact, there has been another raid.
Yeah, has there?
Been in the news since then.
And they're bringing in Sherlock Gnomes to to check up on the whole thing. It's news to me. I'm Bill Prince in the chair, surrounded by Madeline Van Bullion, George Young, and John Scott. And we begin the second half with this week's examples of prime graffiti. And here's mine first. On a wall in Nigeria is written the legend, "Power corrupts." Underneath, somebody's added, "Total power is even more fun." George, what's yours?
There was a notice in the London streets. It said, "Fewer dogs, cleaner streets," and somebody wrote underneath it, "Less graffiti, cleaner walls."
Absolutely.
Mine is, I'm afraid, anti-Margaret Thatcher. Poor lady's been having a lot of trouble. Sign in London saying, "Support British Steel," and underneath somebody had written, "Smelt the Iron Lady."
Let's start the question, shall we? And I think Madeline can start this first. It was reported from Perth in Australia recently that a farmer had just washed his sheep dog, and couldn't do a thing with it. What was the problem?
Had washed his sheep dog and couldn't do a thing with it. It destroyed the sense of smell.
No.
Whatever shampoo it was.
No. Don't take too much notice of the washing part.
Just to put you off.
And what kind of a stupid question is
that? The main point is that this Australian farmer can't do a thing with his sheepdog. Just a nice phrase, that washing sheepdog can't do a thing with
it. There again, something knocks at the back of his wooden mind. He said it's something which fixed... Oh, no, I can't remember.
All right. John, did you read it?
I think this was a story... That involved a man. He imported a Yes. Scottish.
Yes.
From the Highlands of Scotland.
That's right.
And this dog was fully trained, but had been trained in a broad Highlands accent.
That's right.
So when he got, when this poor dog, very confused dog, got brought Australian, his mind went on the blink. He didn't know what was going on.
No.
He was a unilingual dog.
He was a complete unilingual
dog. He spoke Scotch, but not Australian.
That's right. So it's you're telling a dog down sport when it really wants to hear, what are you doing, laddie? All right, next one coming up. And this is John's. Why is there a great interest among British women in men's socks these days? According to a press report I read recently.
Yes, well, I presume that they've started wearing men's socks as a new fashion.
No, not really. George?
Men's socks are supposed to have an effect on their romance. Yes. When they go to bed at night with socks on, they're regarded as more romantic, and their wives prefer them to wear their socks.
Surely
not. Yes. They go to bed with their socks on.
Yes.
Oh. And I wanted to hear Madeline's opinion on that, and I've heard it. In Britain, let me give you the exact report. In Britain, there's something called the Sock Advisory Service, which was set up last year. I don't quite know what it does. But in telephone calls to the Services Bureau in the West End, hundreds of women have told the Bureau that they found men who keep their socks on in bed romantic and sexy. Another lady said they fantasize about a man wearing only one sock to bed, and still more revealed that they get a kick from watching men take their socks off.
Bro.
Now, you're very good, Madeline. I'll take one sock off for you at the end of the show.
Oh. Second prize is for him to take two socks off.
Prize is for me to find another program.
Right, George, a report from Madrid indicates that the annual festival of St. James could be more spectacular this year than ever before. Why?
St. James?
Yes.
That's not the clue. The spectacular is the clue. Well,
the most spectacular scene in Spain is this bull run when they race through the streets.
The Pamplona one.
I think it's the Pamplona run, but it's more spectacular than that.
No, I don't know that one.
Who knows?
Yes.
Right.
The Spanish Nudist League of Pilgrims. I'm going to walk in the procession of St. James without their clothes on.
Yes. Yes, under the banner of the coordinated nudist radicalist ecologists of Galicia.
Okay.
What do they call themselves?
I don't know.
And they will set out from traditional places in Europe to Santiago de Compostela in northern Spain. St. James is the patron saint of Spain. And the nudist pilgrims will take part this year. Let's hope the weather keeps warm for them, shall we?
Now, don't you think that the bull run at Pamplona will be enormous fun if the boys are all running without their clothes on?
Well, yes.
Think of the opportunity for the bulls.
Well, the bulls don't have any clothes on, do they? Now, from Santiago de Compostela, I like saying that.
Yeah, I hear that.
To Santiago de Chile, and comes news of a new export trade to Europe and the USA, which is proving to be very, very profitable. What is it? Who wants to know? Madeline.
Bees.
Bees?
Hmm.
Why?
They've got really fancy bees in Chile. You make them cross, they sting you to death.
Well, you're not quite right there. Not quite right. Don?
Spiders.
Yes, tell us the story.
More and more people want spiders as pets, and Chile is exporting tarantulas.
Yes.
I don't know why they bother to come to one of my garages and full of very frightening spiders. Yes.
Yes, they're exporting large black furry tarantula spiders to pet shops in France and Holland, and it's the newest fad in Europe. They're also exporting lizards, frogs and snakes. And a Chilean firm called Expo Fauna is also exporting llamas and alpacas to the USA as pets. Nobody wants dogs and cats anymore. They all want tarantulas and llamas.
Exotica.
Yes, of course. John, you try this. It was reported from New York that a group of people stood in the street outside the New York Times building shouting, "Get rich! Get rich!"
Mm.
Why would they do that?
Yes, because this Mr. Rich had defrauded them and threw an advert in the New York Times. And they had actually come to get their money back.
You guessed that, didn't you?
Yes. Make it up.
You can see the seraphic smile on the opposite side.
It was a Mr. Rich. Not that part of it, right? But not the rest of it. So we'll see if somebody can.
I remember Mr. Rich was a show critic on the newspaper, and he criticized the show so vigorously that nobody turned up for it, and all the players lost their jobs, and so they went down to the newspaper, and outside they bawled out, "We want Rich, or get rich."
Now he was in the dog.
Get rich, yes. They were very angry with him because he lost them all their jobs. The show opened on a Monday and closed on a Tuesday. Because he criticized it, gave it a bad write-up.
A well-read critique, that must have been.
Yes, he's very powerful. reviewer, apparently. Now, then, Lady Christine de la Rue, wife of Sir Eric de la Rue in Scotland, has told the press that she has her cake and is certainly going to eat it. How's she going to do that? George, do you know?
Repeat that nobleman's name.
Lady Christine de la Rue, wife of Sir Eric de la Rue.
That makes her only Lady de la Rue, not a Christine de la Rue.
Her name is Christine.
I know, but that still doesn't make her a lady. She just becomes Lady with a surname with no name in between, and she's a lady in her own right.
Dogmatic, isn't she?
Yes, very dogmatic. And I'll tell you why she's having her cake and eating. She's pregnant with her second child because she has a live-in lover in this gloomy Scottish castle she and Sir Eric inhabit.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a millionaire and Sir Eric's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
They share everything. Including Sir Eric's wife.
I could say that.
Right.
Yes. Yes. Sir Eric is 77. Lady Christine is 42. Or Lady de la Rue is 42. Please you. And he doesn't like kids. He says you're far better off with dogs or guinea pigs.
Or spiders.
Or spiders.
I take it at actually any time.
So, Lady Christine is now expecting a baby, the father being Sir Eric's best friend, multi-millionaire David Liddell Granger. The three of them are all best of friends. Lady Christine lives at Granger's castle next door and comes home to her own castle every day to cook her husband's lunch and dinner. And she says that though she is married to Sir Eric, he's more of a father figure, and Liddell Granger plays the part of the husband who lives next door. Next question coming up. In Auckland, police say there is too much faith in bingo. Why? George?
People are winning too often.
Some of them are, some of them aren't. Not the reason. Madeline?
Not the faintest idea.
John?
The Roman Catholic priest is running the bingo sessions there.
Of course.
And I wouldn't say he's cooked the books, but he's issued too many cards or whatever, and the result is that they're making thousands for church funds, but in what is regarded as not quite a legal way, so I think he's been charged.
Yes, his name is Father Faith. Father Andrew Faith, who's been running the bingo games, and the weekly bingo game, which is a crime in New Zealand, apparently, was being run by the priest, and police have swooped down on the evil scene, and he now faces serious charges for which he could be fined. So Father Faith has lost faith in bingo, and he will have to think of another way to raise funds.